Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where one of the special features of Gemara markings, Shas Ozer, you see a topic heading, the Nosei, where we've written, Lamros She'ein Shvua Chola Al Shvua, even though we established in our previous shiur that a second Shvua cannot be superimposed on a first Shvua, Im Nish'al Al HaRishayna, if he absolved himself from the first vow, Shnia Chola Olav, the second vow then kicks in. It then takes hold. The Gemara. Shvua Shelo Ochal, Shvua Shelo Ochal, person swore twice. He takes an oath, he's not going to eat. And then he repeats it. An oath, I'm not going to eat. And then he eats. Eino chayav elo achas. We saw that in the Mishnah that he's guilty of only one shvua violation. On the surface, it would seem that there is no second shvua. And when we say that, it again, on the surface, it would appear it just doesn't exist. It never took hold. Alma Rava. So Rava reveals to us that that thinking is erroneous. Im nishal al harishona, if he sought the absolution of the oath through a Torah sage, the absolution of the first vow, the first oath, shnia chala olav, the second oath takes hold. And the result of that would be that if he goes ahead and eats, he will be guilty of having violated an oath, and part of that involves the obligation then to bring a sacrifice for atonement. Mimai, how does Rava know this? Answer, Midalo Kotani, from the fact that the phrasing of the Mishnah was not Chayav Achas. Inami, Eino Elo Achas. Neither of those expressions appear. Those expressions would have led us to believe, like we thought initially, that there's only one vow altogether. Vikotoni, but what does the Mishnah actually say? Eino chayov elo achas. The person who had taken the, we'll say that, double vow, he's chayov for only one of them. So what does that connote? Revacha hu deles law. There isn't any room for the second vow to manifest itself. Ki mitchel al chaverto chaylo. However, when he rescinds the first one, mitchel word she'ela or she'elas chocham, nishal we saw before, when he approaches a sage for the absolution of the first oath, then the second one, chaylo, takes hold. Lishno achrina, another version of Rava's point, Chiyuva hu deleka Hashvua ika. In commenting on the Mishnah, the observation is made that there isn't any guilt for the second oath. In other words, if he had sworn not to eat and he then eats, he'd be guilty only of violating one vow. But there is a second vow present. Lamai Hilchasa, if you're saying that he's not guilty of violating the second vow, so what practical application is there in stating that it exists? l'chida Rava. The Yomar Rava, this observation is necessary for Rava's teaching, namely, Nishal al harishona also lo shniyah tachteha. That if the second, if the first vow is absolved, the second one takes over, and he is still bound by whatever he had sworn. Lemo mesayale, can we say that the following Tanaic source supports that? What does it say? Misha nodar shtei nezirus umono eso rishoino, person who had sworn to observe two nezirus, and he counted the 30-day requirement for the first nezirus, v'ifrish korban, and he set aside the required sacrifices that characterize the end of a nezirus period, v'nishal aleh, and then he sought absolution from that nezirus period, also lo shniyah barishona, the second nezirus that he had taken upon himself, fills the void left by the absolved first nezirus. So what do we see from here? That by having the first one rescinded, so the second one can then take over. That you see here in a Tanaic source. The Gemara says no. In this Tanaic source, you don't see a support for Rava's teaching, because the Tanaic source is talking about a case Kigon Shekibil Olav Shtei Nezirus Bevas Achas. He had accepted two Nazirite periods simultaneously. In other words, not that he said Hareini Nozir Vehareini Nozir, but he said Hareini Shtei Nezirios. That in one phrase he immediately obligated himself to two Nezirus periods. However, if there is a sequence in the acceptance, then upon seeking absolution from the first, I would not say that the second one is there to take over and fill the void. Let us take a look at the Ran, second line from the bottom of the Ran commentary. V'dochi dehocha kegon shekibul lov shtei nezirus v'asachas askinon. In this Tanaic source, we were speaking about someone that accepted two Nazirite periods simultaneously. And therefore, when he absolves himself from the first one, the second one fills the void. Because at the moment that he vowed, both were fit to set in. Avol b'shavuos li'olam emelach dekevan d'shniyah lo chaylo ki afke mipume. In the case of shavuah shaloi oichal, and then he said again shavuah shaloi oichal, since the second shavuah did not take hold at that moment when he uttered it, when it left his lips, ki mitchal arishoino nami lo chaylo, when he rescinds the first one, the second one doesn't kick in, meaning the second one never existed to begin with. That's as far as if you were trying to support Rava's teaching from this source, you couldn't do so successfully. We now continue with the Mishnah at the top of Omid Beis. You might want to note that this Mishnah covers most of the Omid. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh, structural note. We've marked this Mishnah up quite extensively. The triangle will highlight the expression Hare Olai, where a person is accepting upon himself some type of vow. And the double underline explains what, or highlights what he says. So you have Hare Olai, it's whatever follows. Rishima Shel Dvarim, we've noted on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh note that we have a list of things, She'enam Brurim Me'alehem. They're not self-evident. V'nitan Lefarshom Kach O Kach. And one could explain them this way or that way. When you're dealing with vows, we have to know Is the person obligating himself to something or not? And diamonds will be used to highlight the expressions stam truma later in the Mishnah, and you'll see, and stam haromim. Stam meaning something that's not defined, not specified. The Mishnah. Stam nedorim lahachmir upirusham lahokel. Rashi has two approaches to this. Let us take a look at the first approach seen in the Rashi. Stam nedorim, the eino yodea be'eze inyan nodar. A person doesn't know exactly what he vowed. Lahachmir. Dazlinon lechumra. V'yamrinon al kol dover hanodur nodar. We will say that in vowing, he had intended to make a vow on something that one prohibits through vowing. Upirushan, aval I meforish gomer de bedover isur nodar lahokel, dahochi hu de kaomar. We will believe him if he says that my vow entailed something that was previously prohibited. Previously prohibited meaning something that was prohibited without it being prohibited through a vow. We look at the Ran. You see the Ran on the fourth line from the top at the Mishnah commentary. Stam nedorim la'achmir upirushan lahokel, klomar misha nodar, someone took a vow, v'yesh lefarish lashono la'achmir lahokel, and based on what we hear, you could interpret it either with restriction or with leniency. Kol shelo pirish echad mehem l'mam niskaven hochem b'stam lachmir. As long as the individual did not explain, we will explain in such a way that will lead to restriction. Upirushon lahokel, the Ran continues. In pirish acha kach v'yomar, if afterwards, after he said, we'll say a vague expression, he then explained and says, Lekachnis kavanti, that this and this was my intention. Soimchen al dvorov, afal pushimek, will rely on what he says, even though the result will be leniency. V'kulumas nisen ad noder becherim, the entire Mishnah, until the case of noder becherim, meforesh, ketzet stamon lahachmir, al we'll show how you can have a case of the unqualified statement results in a stringency, in a restriction. This is a reference to the Mishnah on Daf Chof Amud Aleph. There, the Mishnah will elaborate on how you see Pirushon, the explanation, in the direction of leniency. So the Mishnah goes on and says, Ketzad. We'll read one more phrase in the Mishnah and then also look at the Ran commentary. Omar hare olai kibisar moliach kiyayin nesech. A person said, regarding some neutral item, a piece of bread, he says, the bread is upon me like salted meat, or like yayin nesech, like wine that's poured. Im b'shel shomayim nodar, also, if he vowed regarding the salted meat, he referred to the meat of sacrifices that is salted. That's called something that's heavenly related, then the vow is a formal, regular vow. Usur, and the bread that was compared to this sacrificial meat will be usur. You cannot eat the bread. You compared it to basar maliach of shamayim. Im b'shel avidis kechavim nodar mutar. If his reference to the salted meat was meat that one offers to an idol, that's idolatry. Idolatry is not something that is usur as a result of your making it such, but rather it's an isur that the Torah imposes on the item. So then mutter, then the vow is not a vow that will be binding, because you compared the piece of bread to idolatry. V'im stam osir, and if he did not explain, so the bread will be osir. The Ran says, Ketzad arei olai kibasar maliach v'yayin nesach, klomar, Ketzad korui stam nidorim. What's an example of stam nidorim? Oimim kibasar maliach v'yayin nesach, demashma shel shamayim. It has the possible meaning of something that is offered to heaven. V'kori lei basar maliach mishum dechtiv. Why is a sacrifice called by the term Basar Maliach? Because the Pasuk says, I'll call Korban Chotak with Melach. On all your sacrifices, you're supposed to include salt. However, Umash Manami Shel Avedis Kechavim Ki Hai Gavno. So it also implies, or can mean, something that is idolatrous. Meat, animals that are offered to idols. Ki Hai Gavne Avistam Nidorim. This is an example of stam, unspecified vowing. Once again, if a person says hare olai kibasar maliach, it's unclear. Da impirish shel shamayim osir, v'impirish shel avodas chovah mutar. Had he specified, I am accepting upon myself this bread to be like basar maliach of shamayim, so the bread will be osir. If he specified, I'm accepting upon myself this bread to be like basar maliach that's offered to idols, the bread will not be osir. V'im stam, the mashma hochi u'mashma hochi, osir. If the person didn't specify which basar maliach, he just said harei olai ke basar maliach, then the bread that's being compared to the basar maliach will be osir. Harei shestam nedorim lachmir. So with this we demonstrate what stam nedorim lahachmir means. We continue in the Mishnah. Harei olai kecherem. A person uses that expression. So im kecherem shel shamayim osir. Cherem is a term that has to do with dedicating things. So if he spelled out and said, I am accepting upon myself this whatever item, whatever neutral item he had in mind, the piece of bread, should be upon me like cherem of shamayim, that means like something one dedicates to the Beis HaMikdash. So a dedication to the Beis HaMikdash is something that you made, usher, so that the vow will take hold, also. So the bread now, being that you compared it to cherem shel shamayim, the bread is something you will not be able to eat. V'yin kecherem shel kehanim mutter. If you spelled out that the bread is upon me like the cherem of kehanim, cherem of kehanim is a reference to items that one, let's say, dedicates or donates to the kahuna. That is not considered a dover hanodur, and therefore mutter, the vow will not take hold. V'im stam, if he simply said hare olai kecherem osir, so the item will be restricted. Hare olai kemeiser, im kemeiser behema nodar osir. Meiser is a tithe; it's a tenth. But what's he referring to? So if he spelled out that I am accepting upon myself this bread to be like Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema is a tenth of animal births on any given year. They are counted out, and each tenth animal of that year's births is set aside and brought as a sacrifice. So it's an example of a korban. Therefore, the vow takes hold. You're comparing the neutral item, the loaf of bread, to a korban, and that makes the bread osir. V'im shel goren mutter. If it's goren is a reference to a granary, so it's a tithe of grains. The the famous or the standard maestris that we refer to. So if he's saying that the bread is upon me like maeser of tavua of grains, that's not a dover hanodor. It's considered a dover haoser, and hence mutter means the vow does not take hold. V'im stam, if he didn't specify, haoser hareolai kitruma. Im kitrumas halishka nodar haoser. If he said that, he said, the bread is upon me like trumas halishka. Trumas halishka is a reference to monies or items that are donated to the temple treasury, to the Beis HaMikdash treasury. So when you specify something for the temple treasury, that item becomes usher. You're making it usher. So that's called a dover hanodur. And therefore, when I parallel the bread or the apple or the orange or whatever to trumas halishka, the vow has been made in the standard vow form, and it takes hold. V'im shel gerin, if he's referring to the truma tithe that one separates at the granary, mutter, that's not an example of a dover ha'osr. Hence, the vow does not take hold. V'im stam, if he didn't explain which kind of truma, then osr divrei Rebbe Meir. Regarding truma and chayrim, there's now another approach. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, stam truma, the unqualified truma, according to Rabbi Meir, unqualified truma will lead us to say that the neder is restrictive. And automatically, we will be restrictive. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, stam truma be Yehuda asura, in the Yehuda region, it's asur. But golil mutter, if you're in the northern part of Israel, and someone said, let us say, regarding a piece of bread, that this bread is upon me like truma, and you live there in the Golil region, the vow will not take hold. She'ein anshe Golil makirin es truma salishka. They live in the northern part of Israel. They're far away from Jerusalem. They're not accustomed, or they're not familiar with temple dedications to the temple treasury. So certainly when they use the word truma, they don't associate it with the trumas halishka. Therefore, it's a vow, it's a, in Golil they'll be referring to the grain tithe of truma. And that's not a, that does not constitute a vow. Stam haromim, the use of the word cherem, without qualification, be Yehuda mutarim here, there's a leniency with regard to the Yehuda region. Begolil asurim. She'en anshe golil makirin es cherme hakehanim. In the Golil region, when they use the term cherem, they are clearly referring to cherem of the Beis HaMikdash, a dedication to the Beis HaMikdash. And that's a dover hanodur. And hence, the nether will take hold. As opposed to in Yehuda, when Cherem is spoken of, being that Yehuda is in the area of the Beis HaMikdash and there was a concentration of Kehanim around the Beis HaMikdash, the word Cherem is associated automatically with a dedication to the Kehuna, and therefore the vow will not take hold. The Gemara asks, V'hatnan, sofek nizirus lahokel. Nizirus is a form of neder. Above we spoke about a stam neder, an unqualified neder, the use of a term in an unqualified fashion. Within the Dorim, we said we will automatically be machmir, we will be restrictive. Here we have the equivalent of a sofek nizirus. There's an element of doubt that could be in a case where a person said, let's use an example, an example that you see in the Mefarshim. Person says, I will be a nozir if that fellow coming in my direction is himself a nozir. And the gentleman never comes my way. So I never discover whether or not he was a nozir. So it's a suffix. There's an element of doubt. And the Tanaic source quoted here by the Gemara says, we are lenient. The Gemara answers, and you'll note that we have a long answer marking. In addition to that, we have a trapezoid or volcano shape. On the side of the one under the Nosei Mivne heading, we note that this is a discussion, and this marking will continue to Yud Tes Amid Beis, which certainly is an amount of Gemara that we're not going to cover in today's shiur. We're just starting this discussion. So we've written in our note that trapezoid highlights the expression lo kashya. They are tshuvos. They are responses. B'mishnosenu kotoni stam nedarim lahachmir. In our Mishnah, we spoke about the unqualified neder as leading to restriction. Uvamokar achir kotoni sofek nezirus lahokel. And in the opening source of the Gemara, we saw that the doubt surrounding nezirus will lead us to say no restriction. The Gemara. Omar Rabbi Zera, lo kashya. There is no contradiction, no difficulty. Ha Rabbi Lozar, ha Rabbanan. We are simply seeing two different schools of Tanaic thought. Disanya, we have a Tanaic source in which the two opinions will appear. And the source describes someone who sanctifies, who dedicates to the Beis HaMikdash all of his chayas and his behemoths. Chayas are undomesticated animals, and behemoths are the domesticated variety of animal. He dedicates all of his animals to the Beis HaMikdash. He mentions his chayos and his behemoths. Does that include the sanctification of a creature that he possesses known as a koi? A koi, different explanations throughout regarding what exactly it is, but one thing for our purposes, there is we'll say there's an element of uncertainty surrounding the koi. Is it a behema? Is it classified as a behema, or is it classified as a chaya? In general, there are a series of halachas in which you see a distinction between, or in which distinctions are made between chayas and behemoths. Just one example of several, and that is the halacha requiring the covering of the blood when a creature is slaughtered. That halacha called kisui hadam, the necessity of having the blood covered, applies only to, in addition to fowl, it applies only to chayos, to the undomesticated variety. The slaughtering of a cow, for example, does not necessitate the covering of the blood. What happens if one slaughters a koi? So that, of course, relates to the issue of, is it a behema or is it a chaya? That is all by way of general background. Now let's look at a Tanaic source. Hamaktish chaysoi vehemto. He sanctifies his chayos and his behemos. And we add, he owns a koi as well. The Tanakama says hiktish es hakoi. The koi is also sanctified. Rebbe Lozer Omer, loy hiktish es hakoi. The koi is not sanctified. Man de Omar mamoinoi mayo lisfeka. According to the Tanakama, that a person is willing to have his possessions, his monetary matters, be part of the doubt. In other words, in this case, the mamon is a reference to the koi, and the koi enters the realm of doubt, and as a result of entering the realm of doubt, either it's a behema or it's a chaya, and he sanctified both of them, so the koi also is sanctified. Rabbi Lozer Omer Lo, in the Gemara, so we saw that the Tanakama, who said that a person has his mammon entering the realm of doubt, and then is therefore subject to the above mentioned stringency. Gufei nami mayo, when it comes to himself, his body, he will also subject himself to the doubt, and as a result of that, that's the we'll say the intention of our Mishnah of stam nedorim lahachmir. If there's any element of doubt, we will be restrictive. However, man diomar momoinu lomayel isfeka, a person who says that even his money matters, if there's an element of doubt, that example of doubt will not enter the vow, the sanctification. In other words, when one sanctifies things, he sanctifies only that which is certain, either certainly a behema or certainly a chaya. Something that's doubtful doesn't enter the picture. So that's Reb Elozer's opinion. We continue at the top of Yud Tes Lamed Aleph. Kol shekein de lo mayel l'sveika. All the more so. Let me read that again. Gufei kol shekein lo mayel l'sveika. So one who says that mamona lo mayel l'sveika, when it comes to his own body, which is the case of observing nazirus, he himself restricts himself. Through nazirus restricts him, his own self, from consuming wine and wine products, all the more so will not enter the realm of doubt. So that if a person accepts upon himself nazirus, he's only accepting nazirus when the circumstances are of clarity, of certainty, not where there is an element of doubt. So with that, you can see we've at this point in the moment, we've resolved what seems to have been a contradiction between our Mishnah and the second source. And we point out then that the opinion of restrictiveness in the face of doubt, that represents the Chachomim, the source that indicates when confronted with doubt, we are lenient, that represents the opinion of Rebbe Elozer. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.